Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated January 25th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Forsyth Plots Housing Expansion, Prairie Winds Areas Near Grade School, Number One Priority. This is brought by Chris Lisvardi, a Herald and Review staff writer from Forsyth. New options for the layout of a large piece of property east of the village are being considered as village board members hope to spark interest in adding housing choices. Developing the 190-acre Prairie Winds area south of Macon County Highway 20, near the Moroa Forsyth Grade School, has been discussed for more than a decade. However, plans for development have yet to be realized. Trustees hope by possibly shifting the location of a park within the development that interest in the property could be renewed as they continue to see a need to offer affordable housing options. The board directed village staff to provide more information about options that were discussed during its January 18th meeting. This is an opportunity for the village to grow, Trustee Bob Grunwald said. Adding 10 to 15 new homes this year is not unreasonable. This is the most logical place in the village to have homes developed. Much of the recent residential development in Forsyth has been to the west of US 51, and trustees generally don't see much more being added on that side of town for the time being. Grunwald said the high cost of property has made building a house unaffordable for many families interested in living in Forsyth. He said being able to show growth in housing can help lead to interest in adding more retail development. Options for single-family and higher density use remain under consideration to be included in the development of Prairie Winds. This is really the only spot to do something like this, Trustee Jim Peck said. Securing a developer for the site within 5 years is included in the village's strategic plan that was implemented last year. The plan suggests new homes be made available in the $125,000 to $200,000 range. Previous estimates from village officials have suggested as many as 220 homes could be built over the 120 acres desired for residential development. This is big, Peck said. This is about the future of the village. We've been sitting on this a long time. It is time to slowly move forward. As plans for Prairie Winds move ahead, trustees are considering whether a park could be a catalyst for interest in Prairie Winds. That's what sells lots, Peck said. Parks have been a big thing around here. We've done them right. Allowing space for parks and recreation has been included in discussions since the idea to create a master plan for the development was proposed in 2003. Earlier proposals have focused on adding as much as 50 acres of recreational space, with the park being located by the grade school, which opened in 2009. Trustee Larry Reed thought the park space and school would go together with housing then added nearby. He's surprised nothing has been built near the school along Highway 20. I thought Parcel 1 would be a big seller next to the road and school, Reed said. The village is working with the Federal Bureau of Land Management to acquire the Illinois Central Railroad right-of-way, which is land adjacent to the Hickory Point Fire Protection District and homes in the Eagle Ridge subdivision. The process could be completed later this year, village attorney Jeff Jurgens said. The planned acquisition led to the idea of extending a park for Prairie Winds from what is anticipated to become recreational space along the right-of-way. That's going to be used before we have development in Prairie Winds, Trustee David Wendt said. Grunwald wants a park included in development plans, although he said the details of what's included is still up for debate and likely would determine how large of a space to dedicate for it. Adding an attraction in the park, such as a splash pad, could help, Grunwald said. It would help it be more than just grass and walking trails, Grunwald said. It would be something people want to use. Other uses for the land have been considered throughout the years, including last year when the board was presented with a proposal to build a sports complex. It decided not to pursue that proposal. A new water treatment facility for the village opened in 2005, accounting for 20 acres of the proposed development area. Despite other suggestions, the focus of village officials remains on adding housing built near the school. In the past, Maroa Forsyth school district officials have expressed interest in eventually building a new middle school next to the grade school, although the school district has said it will look at other possible locations rather than acquire land from the village. With the middle school addition remaining unsettled, trustees are thinking about how the land in between the grade school and older part of town can best be utilized. Development is likely to occur in increments, and infrastructure will need to be added, trustee Kirsten Trachtenbach said. If we can get something rolling on one part, we can see the interest to purchase other land from the village, Trachtenberg said. We don't want it to become stagnant, but need to be careful, as it can be an expensive undertaking. A walking, biking trail could link the old part of Forsyth with the school, but some skepticism among members of the board remains about when and where to add that. Grunewald said a trail doesn't seem worthwhile running through an empty field without housing, but could get more use if it was surrounded by homes. Also from the front page, getting right rhythm. Assumption business, anything but a drag. An article from Tony Reed, subtitled Couples Pedal Tractors Pull In Competitors, from Assumption. The emotional tractor beam generated by pedal tractor pulling draws in people of all ages. From kids age 3 or 4 to their parents and even grandparents, there are all kinds of rivalries and intergenerational challenges to settle out there on the 30-foot-long course. For those whose worldview lacks the breadth of hot and rural cultural trends, pedal tractor pulling is the toy tractor version of the big thing that involves real horsepower and real tractors. The idea is the same, though. A rider sees how far he can motivate his or her tractor while dragging a sled handicapped by a moving weight system. It gets harder the farther you go, and the puller who pedals farthest wins. An Assumption-based outfit called Tot Rod Pedal Pulls will be more than happy to demonstrate for you. Run by husband and wife team Paul and Stephanie Callen, they can deliver a self-contained pedal tractor pull tournament to your next town festival, post-prom event, birthday party, and even family reunion. They've got their first one booked for September. But describing the Callen fleet of machines as toy pedal tractors is like saying a Ford Focus is similar to a Ferrari because they are both cars. The Tot Rods rejoice under names such as Krankenstein and Pony Express and are either custom-built or extensively modified. Pony Express started out life as a regular garden tractor, for example, and are rolling works of pedaled art. Paul Callen, service manager of the lawn and garden department at Sloan Implement, John Deere dealership in Assumption, is the creator of those marvels and knows his way around metalwork and mechanical systems. He can also custom build or restore a pedal tractor for you, but you'll probably have to wait for the depths of winter for him to get started. Summer and fall always see him on the road with his wife to stage their tractor pull gigs. They did 16 of them in 2015. The Callens have a 3-hour travel limit, but that gives them reach over much of the land of Lincoln, and they've been out as far as little northern Illinois town of Walnut, a full 180-minute drive. People hear about us and we get referrals, says Paul Callen modestly, explaining that word of their fun pedal tournaments has had time to seed itself far and wide. I guess there is a kind of pedal tractor grapevine, said Callen, and there's Facebook. A lot of us that do this talk and share ideas. Everybody who hires them does tractor pull in their own way, but the Callens say most of their clients like to have trophies for the champions, and some adult versions even feature a cash pool for the winning competitor who pulls the pedal to the metal. It costs between $300 and $500 to put a tractor pull competition at your event, and Tot Rod Pedal Pulls has been doing it for the last 10 years, so getting it right is not a tough row to hoe for them. But while they can promise a fun and well-run event, they can't guarantee the results. Stephanie Callen handles much of the scoring and race organization and remembers well the 9-year-old girl at a pull in Mount Zion. She wound up competing in an open class against boys and girls, some of them up to 12 years old, and plowed them all under. She just beat everybody, says Callan, 42. And then there was the skinny 8-year-old from Bethany a few years ago, who looked like he would need assistance standing upright in a strong wind. He climbed aboard a pedal tractor for the first time and left bigger kids eating his dust as they huffed and puffed and spun their wheels. I just think a lot of it comes down to your coordination and technique, says Paul Callan, 47. You need that certain amount of rhythm to get it all going right. The Callans have certainly got the business rhythm going well and use the cash harvest from their labors to pay for some of life's jollities, such as family vacations that include a pending trip with their sons, age 13 and 8, to Disney World. Stephanie Callan says it comes as a reward after a sweaty Midwest summer and fall, staging pedal tractor pulls all over the place. But her ever-entrepreneurial husband can't help but hear the sound of opportunity pedaling near. I think I mentioned it one time, you know, staging a tractor pull at Disney, he says, eyes showing a faraway gleam. Then he cycles back to reality with a glance at his wife. Maybe not, he adds. A sidebar to the article says, more information? Ready to pedal with fury? Tot Rod Pedal Pulls can be reached at 217-820-9868 or go to www.totrodpedalpulls.com. And an article from Springfield on the front page, Illinois officials may cooperate on justice topic. Governor Bruce Rauner wants to reduce the number of inmates in Illinois' overcrowded prison system over the next decade, and he's willing to devote money to do so at a time when he's urging lawmakers to be prudent with spending in other areas. Reforming the criminal justice system presents the Republican governor with a rare opportunity to find agreement with legislators as he prepares to deliver his second State of the State address Wednesday. Rauner's first year in office has been defined by a budget stalemate, now in its seventh month, with Democrats who control the legislature. But reforming the criminal justice system and shifting more attention to rehabilitating offenders is an issue that's appealing to both parties here and around the country. Even though there's a lot of gridlock right now, you're seeing a real strong bipartisan agreement that this is something that Illinois has to do, said John Mackey, executive director of Illinois' Criminal Justice Information Authority, an organization that administers federal public safety grants and researches criminal justice trends. Mackey is part of a 28-member group convened by Rauner last year with the goal of reducing Illinois' prison population by 25% by 2025. Here's a look at the group's work and some of the 14 recommendations they've presented the governor. The challenge. Illinois' prison population has grown from 6,000 in 1974 to about 49,000 presently. That's an increase of more than 500% for a system designed to house 32,000 inmates. Annually, it costs more than $22,000 to incarcerate someone, and the state spends $1.3 billion per year on prisons. Rauner told commission members January 14th that programs that reduce recidivism and help inmates acclimate into society are a worthy investment to save money in the future. It's a popular idea among other states with Republican leadership, such as Georgia and Kansas, which have recently taken measures to reduce their prison population. Some Democrats also have long expressed interest in reforming states' criminal justice systems, arguing that minorities are often disproportionately represented in prisons, sometimes as a result of low-level drug offenses. I was glad to hear Rauner say it, said Representative L.G. Sims, a Chicago Democrat on the commission. And I hope that the investment and the desire to get things done really happen. The recommendations. Since the commission started meeting in March, its focus has been to study possible changes to sentencing laws, alternatives to incarceration, and effective rehabilitation programs. Among the group's recommendations. Allow judges' discretion to sentence someone to probation for low-level offenses, such as residential burglary or some drug crimes. encouraged the Department of Corrections to use alternatives to prison for those facing a sentence of less than a year. Use electronic monitoring instead of prison for those with short sentences. Eliminate unnecessary restrictions for convicts looking to obtain professional licenses for jobs. Improve prison rehabilitation programs with a focus on substance abuse and cognitive behavioral therapy. If we can implement your recommendations, I firmly believe that we can have the people of Illinois safer. I believe that we can save taxpayer money, and most importantly, I believe we can help those who've made mistakes lead productive lives, Rauner told the group. It's not yet known how much rehabilitation programs would cost the state or how the state would cover the price tag. The next steps. Many of the first set of recommendations can be implemented without legislative approval, but the group is working on more recommendations due this spring that will require legislation. Some of the topics include possible changes to sentences without the possibility of parole and modifications to sentences for drug offenses. Those may require tough votes for lawmakers, commission members said. It can be seen as being soft on crime when in reality we're being smart on crime, said Representative Scott Drury, Democrat of Highwood. Brendan Kelly, the state's attorney in St. Clair County, and another member of the commission said its goals are laudable, but added there must be caution not to do away with laws that have improved public safety, such as mandatory minimums for violent crimes. That's the trick. Public safety has to be paramount. And from the local page, Ryan Voiles, staff writer for the Herald and Review, brings an article, Election Challenges Delay Early Voting, from Decatur. Challenges to presidential candidates on the primary ballot will delay when voters can actually cast a ballot. Macon County Clerk Steve Bean announced Friday that his office would not likely be able to do early voting until mid-February as the Illinois State Board of Elections continues to deal with objections to 7 presidential candidates on the ballot. We cannot proceed with printing ballots until that is cleared up, Bean said. The Board of Elections must go through about 116,000 lines of signatures to determine whether to keep the objected candidates on the ballot. The 7 candidates being objected to include the 3 major Democratic candidates, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Martin O'Malley, as well as Republican candidates Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Going through those signatures can be a time-consuming process, especially with the board's short staff, Bean said. When his own office had to handle petition challenge for a circuit clerk last year, Bean said it took his 3-person board 2 days to review 168 lines of signatures. With the delay, the clerk's office will instead send write-in ballots to those military and overseas voters when they are mailed in the coming weeks. Once the ballots are finalized, the clerk's office will send the new ballots to the same people. The write-in ballots will be counted if the new ballots are not received in time, Bean said. However, a new law will allow those ballots to count if the by-mail date is by election day. In addition, ballots will not be ready for the February 4th opening of absentee and early voting. Instead, county clerks are being told by the state they should be ready no later than February 17th. With the potential loss of more than a week of early voting, Bean is hopeful that it will not overtly affect the number of votes in Macon County and across the state. He hopes that it brings awareness for a need to change the way challenges are made, with rules being set up by the political parties. I hope this does not impact the voters, but instead wakes up political parties that they need to consider the voters, Bean said. And from Bloomington, brought by Lenore Sabota, Lee News Service writer, Enticing Trails, Clinton Lake Path rates high with dedicated walker. A hiking enthusiast shares her favorite trails. Illinois Wesleyan University physics professor Linda French has hiked to the top of all 48 peaks above 4,000 feet in the White Mountains in New Hampshire and along paths nearly 200 years old in England, but she also finds beauty right here in central Illinois. My current favorite is Clinton Lake State Recreation Area's North Fork Trail, French said at a recent lunch and learn lecture at the McLean County Museum of History. I recommend this highly. The 9.3-mile trail is rated primitive and difficult, with many steep ups and downs in and out of ravines. French said the trail is particularly beautiful in spring when wildflowers bloom in the woods. Parts of the trail also pass through prairie areas. She uses the trail to train for her more ambitious goals, such as hiking to the top of all 67 peaks higher than 4,000 feet in New England. For those training hikes, French usually carries a fully loaded pack, wears supportive hiking shoes, and uses trekking poles. "I have come to love my poles," she said. But hiking doesn't need to be complex or require much special equipment. What I love about hiking is you don't need a lot of specific skills. You just walk, French said. There are no rules. And as much as she likes the challenge of peak bagging and wild trails, French said, we are very blessed here to have access to Constitution Trail. Other favorite places she recommends are Moraine View State Recreation Area near Leroy, particularly its Tall Timber Backpacking Trail, and Starved Rock State Park. French said she turned to hiking as a student when I got burned out and needed a break, and it's something she expects to continue doing. She's not alone. She quotes figures from Statista.com indicating that 36 million Americans went hiking in 2014. She emphasized the importance of preserving and appreciating wild areas, quoting Henry David Thoreau's essay, Walking, in which he wrote, "In wildness is the preservation of the world." The Lunch and Learn series is presented by Illinois Wesleyan, the museum, and the Collaborative Solutions Institute. From Mattoon, Mattoon gets mental health support group. When Donna Mayer's son was diagnosed with mental illness several years ago, the Mattoon resident could not find a local support group. Mayer said she sought support from the Champaign County affiliate of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI. She said NAMI helped her navigate through the privacy regulations of mental health care and understand what her son is going through. Now she and other area volunteers with NAMI plan to expand the organization into Coles County. NAMI plans to offer a free family-to-family course in Mattoon for families, partners, and friends of those with mental illness. The course will be held from 6:30 to 9 p.m. every Wednesday, starting February 24th at the Salvation Army Building. Mayer said the course will be funded by a local family that lost a son to mental illness. Douglas County resident Diane Zell, vice president of the Champaign affiliate, said this in-depth course will give an overview of brain disorders and other medical background information about mental illness. She said the presenters also will share tips on finding a good psychiatrist, preparing a crisis plan, and more. Sue Heth, vice president of NAMI of Effingham County, and Mayer said they hope to establish a regular NAMI support group for caregivers in Mattoon after the initial family-to-family course has concluded. Mayer, who is now a family-to-family teacher with NAMI, said her goal is to educate the community about mental illness. She said there are a lot of myths about the origins of mental illness. More information about NAMI support services in Coles and Effingham counties is available by calling Mayer at 217-234-7616 or emailing NAMI Effingham, that's NAMIEFFINGHAM, at gmail.com. From Shelbyville, brought by Sharon Barraclough for the Herald and Review, Shelby groups cooperate to build Honor Flight Fund. $18,000 raised to help some visit Washington. Retired Shelbyville history teacher Andy Sikalowski knows firsthand the difference a soldier can make in a life. As a small child in Nazi-occupied Europe, his life could have turned out quite differently without the intervention the U.S. Army gave him. "I wouldn't have been here. It's that simple," Sikalowski said. Because of his gratitude to the veterans who fought World War II, Sikalowski, a former Shelbyville City Council member, has worked with area groups to help establish the Shelby County Veterans Fund to help send veterans on Land of Lincoln honor flights to Washington, D.C. Honor flights take veterans at no cost to them to see their respective wars memorials in the nation's capital during a one-day trip. They are accompanied by guardians who usually pay their own way. The Shelbyville VFW, Moose Lodge, VFW Men's Auxiliary, Fire Department, and Opossum Lodge worked with employees of the Shelby Electric Cooperative to raise money for the new fund. Bake sales, cookouts, donations, and a $5,000 grant from a bank raised $18,000 in less than 6 months. "We never imagined how much support we would gain from the local community. It was amazing how everyone pulled together and supported this effort," said Josh Schallenberger, CEO of Shelby Electric Cooperative. CoBank, one of the cooperative's lending agencies, offers $3 million annually to members for rural charities. Schallenberger said Shelby Electric employees chose the Shelby Veterans Fund. Veterans Fund organizer Rich Johnson said the honor flights try to serve a large veteran population. "We have 14 from World War II, 77 from Korea, and 537 Vietnam veterans," he said. "Everyone should have a chance to go to Washington and see their memorial. It's only right." And from Effingham, brought by Justin Kahn, diabetes program helps in Effingham, Jasper counties. The large number of diabetes patients in Effingham and Jasper counties now have a resource to help deal with their disease. One of the findings in the community health needs assessment showed diabetes prevalence in Effingham and Jasper Medicare enrollees is higher than the state average. In response, HSHS St. Anthony's Memorial Hospital teamed with Catholic Charities to offer the Community Diabetes Program. For free, clients can meet with a registered dietitian who will help them with the resources to manage their disease. "Diabetes is a very costly disease, and it's progressive. We want to do anything we can to prevent progression," said Bonnie Cruz, St. Anthony's Director of Clinical Nutrition. "We see patients coming in our physicians' offices who don't have money to pay for their medicine. Not only does that hurt the patient, but it becomes an expense to the population at large. Our goal is to help patients control their blood sugar." Through the program, diabetics can get help with healthy food options, with St. Anthony's and Catholic Charities working to provide diabetic-friendly foods from their food pantry. Help with medication costs and free blood sugar testing supplies, particularly high-need items such as strips to test blood sugar and a glucometer, also are provided. For additional information or to schedule an appointment, call the Community Diabetes Program at 217-994-2737. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, January 25th, 2016. Please stay tuned. This is Wendy Bauer,